From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. It's always a gas I have old friends come and do the show, and my guest who's sitting across from me who says he wants to play regular guys, but so far has never done that, was last here for the film he directed and starred in, Miles Ahead, of course, starring Don Cheadle, whose new show is Black Monday on Showtime. First of all, Don, welcome back.
Thank you, Elvis. Good to be here, man.
Good to have you back. Let's talk about Black Monday, because what's interesting about the show is that people could say he's like Marty, but he's really not. I mean, I feel like he's a kind of narcissist who doesn't like to have people around, but likes to have people around to
boss around.
Yes.
To push into schemes and to try to use as pawns. And he has no real attachment to anyone, I think. There's no ballast, you know what I mean? There's nothing that's kind of grounding him in the way that I think Marty had a family, you know, he had a father. He was very close to his child, obviously. And of course, you know, Jeannie in that sort of way that it worked in the business side, and also the love of his life. But in this dude is just kind of his unhinged id. I think he's just moving from a deep place of, like you said, narcissism and fear, and ego is just running everything. And he's not, you know, I think when you look at the things that he's trying to put together, if you were to break them down, they're not foolproof. Let's just say they got some holes in them. His plans got some holes in them.
But it's funny, though, because the show is really basically about how that whole period was about one Ponzi scheme after another.
Yeah.
And at least Marty thought he was trying to do some social good at some point.
That's right.
And all Mo's about is just trying to make that dollar, right?
Just get over any way you can and throw anybody under the bus. There's a lot of, you know, someone that we see at the top of our country right now. There's some beats that I think Mo borrows.
Why, whatever do you mean?
Well, you know, just sort of the win at all costs, you know, who cares what anybody else says, lie in the face of everything if you need to, even if you just said, you know, it was blue. If somebody said, you just said blue, say it's red. It doesn't matter. Whatever it takes, whatever I have to do, whoever has to pay the cost, it's fine.
Well, some of my favorite stuff in the show is whenever he is caught in a lie, he immediately spins his way out of it like it didn't happen. Like he just refuses to acknowledge it.
That's right. Yeah, I think, like I said, you know, we have a leadership that appreciates that sort of jujitsu, and Mo leans right into it.
When I ask you, though, would you say the show is set? Basically, it starts off 365 days before Black Monday, so it was kind of like the Godot in the room is the title. And from playing a year out from that, how do you ground that character? Because it really is everybody in the office, everybody around him is really just about trying to make the next conquest. So how do you make this guy feel real to you?
Well, first of all, we know it's a comedy, and it's a pushed comedy. And, you know, it's these characters are made to live at the extremities of their emotions and of their motivations and all of that. So, you know, I think you can parse real in that way. To me, they're grounded because those behaviors are real. You know, his insecurity is real. His desire to not be the 11th, you know, trading firm, but I got to get into single digits. I mean, that stuff is very real for him. Being a black man who's pushing against this, you know, complete white wall that he's you know, dealing with, and having a group of traders that he feels like have to prove themselves over and over again. I think all of those things are real. And then, you know, that becomes obviously protracted, and it becomes something that is pushed for comedy's sake. But those real human emotions are absolutely grounded and real.
It's funny, too, because it also plays in something you've done a number of times, which is to play the absurdity, almost the surrealism of being a black person in a white world. And this really lends itself to that, doesn't it?
100%. And that's what I think is great about the casting, too, to have Regina Hall there, who's amazing. And, you know, we are dealing with things, hopefully smuggling in things. We're not leading with those, but those are things that are constantly being brought up and become part of the storytelling, how we are the outsiders, how we are, you know, I think David Nevins kind of talked about it as, you know, the bad news bears of traders in that time. And that gives us the ability to bring in a lot of storylines. You know, we're talking about homosexuality on the show. All of these things get to be a part of the story without necessarily having to be centered. They're still They're still centering around trying to get rich and greed and screwing each other over and who's got the stick. But it's cool to smuggle in all that other stuff and have an opportunity to talk about it without it having to be an issue show, you know?
Yeah, because you could, I was thinking in watching the show, it could almost be played as drama because of all the stuff that comes up. And there's so much, I'm not sure there's a better way to put this, self-hatred in the show. A lot of these characters really don't like themselves.
Yeah, I think everyone is struggling with that because, look, they understand what it is that that world is sort of not just expecting you to do, but how it completely supports it and how everything, everyone else is playing that same game. You know, when this came up, one of my good friends, a guy that I've spent a lot of time with, he was a traitor during this period of time. And
African-American?
No, it's a white guy.
Okay.
But he was talking about that very thing you're talking about, the self-loathing that he didn't really appreciate until he was out of it. When he looked back and he was like, I was 300 pounds. I was on every drug. Our, you know, our sport was screwing somebody over. It wasn't just enough to win. They really wanted to make somebody, you know, pay. Somebody had to come out on the end of the sticks. Excuse me. Somebody had to lose. And that's really what their sport was. And that's how they sort of also checked off wins and losses, is whose, you know, whose smoldering body is left at the other side of this trade. And later when he looked back and pulled himself out of that, he said, wow, I think I was suicidal. I think I was on a track that I could have very easily, you know, he was definitely headed for a heart attack. But he said, I think I may have even taken myself out.
Wow. We're talking self-loathing with my guest Don Cheadle, whose new triumph on Showtime is Black Monday. But I just thought that was so interesting because, again, the show could veer in either direction. It could be really extreme melodrama, and there are dramatic beats in it. Those moments, really the moments of quiet, where Mo has a measure of who and what he is, and there's one in every episode. And I feel like that's the kind of thing you see in each script, and you sort of gravitate to that, don't you, a little bit?
Well, I think that's what allows us to go out far, you know? I think the more that you really feel like this character's coming from someplace that is real, you can push the absurdity. You can push all of these extreme comedic moments very far because you believe you're not just dealing with, it's not just a cartoon. If it were just a cartoon, you could, you know, discount the entire thing. But I think we're really seeing people who are fragile, who are hurt, who are trying to push back in ways that they think it's what is necessary in order to win, and who have, you know, made, you know, sort of Faustian deals and said, well, this, whatever it takes, we're going to do that. And when that's working underneath that, and that's what's underpropping all of that stuff, then I think it does give us the ability to make insane scenes where they're having, you know, Manhattan pageants where they're auctioning off people and racism is right. Everything's just pushed out in the front, you know, and it's just great.
As you're talking about that, I was thinking about the beginning of the episodes where there's a consultant brought in to talk about sexual harassment in the office place.
The amount of jokes we didn't do.
Really? You left jokes out.
We always leave jokes. Look, our writers, the showrunners, David Kasp and Jordan Kahan, are just, they're insane. And they often say things that I say, well, if you're going to say it, if you want to put on the Mo costume and get out there and say it, then you can do it. But I'm not saying that. And, you know, it's always sort of that negotiation. How far is too far? You know, where can we go? And if you don't, if there's certain things that you can't eschew, how they speak about women, how they speak about minorities, how they speak about gays, how they speak about each other, because that is the 80s. That is clearly what the 80s, you know, that was how it was. That's how people spoke. So if we don't do any of that, then we're kind of really violating the trust between us and that time period. So you have to do it. But when you're pushing things for comedy and you're trying to go to shocking and alarming, you know, lines, a lot of times you're like, that one's too far. That one's too far.
Because I was noticing, too, about this, is it's a really claustrophobic show. People in each other's faces, yeah, all the time. They're constantly, these groups kind of huddle together. There's not much room. The ceilings seem to be really low. Yep. You feel like you're almost trapped with these people.
And smoke. Everybody's smoking. It is very claustrophobic. It is very rats in a cage. You do feel that sort of pressure. And I think that is also a part of the show, that, you know, their offices are not glamorous in any way, shape, or form. These, you know,
which is actually what you find out when you go to trading offices. They're not glamorous either.
No. This is where people are just hustling and grinding and trying to stay ahead, and fights in the pit. You know, all that stuff in the 80s was real. All that stuff was really going down. And I think that all helps the design of the show. And, you know, we have great designers, and that really plays a part in it. Like you said, it feels claustrophobic. It feels like everybody's kind of at each other's throat all the time.
Because I'm feeling like, too, that creates a kind of adrenaline when the people are constantly together like that and constantly talking. That almost ramps you up. It kind of serves as kind of a de facto cocaine, doesn't it? It kind of keeps you just kind of amped all the time.
I think it's both. And I think the pace of trading, you know, just the pace of it, even if you don't have a granular understanding of it, which I don't, but if you just look at it from the outside and just think about what the trading floor looks like and think about the amount of movement that stocks make and trades go, it's going up, it's going down. You constantly have to figure out how you're going to get in there and how you're going to manipulate this. And these guys are doing inside trading and they're...
Everything is illegal these guys are doing.
But at this period, it really wasn't seen. I think there's a line in the show where Andrew Rannells' character says, Blair says to somebody, but that's inside trading. And the guy goes, we just call that trading.
That's in the first episode.
Yeah. And that really kind of was that. I mean, this was sort of the advent of when all of these sort of things got put into place, all of these kinds of restrictions and all of these, you know, precautionary measures that were placed on traders at this moment. This is kind of when it really started, because of people like Ivan Boesky, because of people
like
Michael Milken, because of those kinds of things, they started instituting a lot of different rules that they're still skirting around, but that was where it kind of started.
Because I just feel like for you to play with somebody who's got that much energy all the time, what do you do to get your head in that place? Because he's ramped up in a way that nobody you've ever played has been like before.
Yeah. Look, I think it's, I don't have trouble believing in the reality of who he is. So it's just...
What do you mean by that?
I mean, I guess at some point as an actor, that's just the circumstances of who he is and what the character is and what you have to achieve and what you're attempting to accomplish. And if his tempo rhythm is, you know, he runs at 160 BPM, that's just where you're at. And so all of the things help us get there. You know, the other cast, obviously, the script is the Bible. That's the first thing that we're
doing. I'm wondering, because when it came to you and you saw the intensity of this, and it's really sort of like no holds barred comedy.
Yeah.
I wonder what it was that made you think, well, I'm ready to do this. Because again, it feels to me, even on the surface, could be compared to other things, is really not like anybody you played before.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And that's probably what it was. You know, a lot of that. I laughed as I was reading it. I love the construction of the piece as also being kind of a whodunit and a mystery. You know, we're tracking this tie pin, we're tracking this watch. It's like, who went through the car?
Tracking this algorithm that's basically lead to like the fall of the American economy.
That's right. All of this stuff that we're trying to figure out. You know, and I couldn't anticipate, and I couldn't get in front of it, and I didn't know where it was headed. I think to a large part because the writers at that point had not decided where a lot of it was headed too. But it was a very interesting construction. I'd never seen a comedy that also had this sort of mystery element to it that was serialized over the course of, you know, a season. So that was very interesting to me. And like I said, I just laughed when I was reading it. I thought that, like, wow, we're really going to be able to say and do a lot of this stuff because we're on cable and we're just going to do it. But it just made me laugh. And this wasn't something that I, you know, went out there to get. David Nevins came to me and said, I think this is something that you could do. First he said, I don't think this is you. then he called, then he said, actually, I reconsidered.
The hook for that?
I think he called and said, I've got this script, but I don't think it's you. I'm like, okay. How you doing? It's good. He's like, all right, I'll talk to you later. Then he called back and said, you know what? Actually, I do think maybe this is you. And I talked to Seth and Evan, you know, Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg are also our producers and they're part of it. And they directed the pilot. And they said, no, we think this is Don. And he said, after consideration, I think this is something that you could do. So he, you know, sent it to me and I read it and we met and kind of chopped it up and brought David and Jordan in. And it just felt like there was an opportunity to do something different. There was an opportunity to play an extreme version of something that you might look at and go, oh, he's been there before, but not like this. Yeah.
We'll take a break. My guest, who's held in unusual regard by the head of Showtime, is Don Cheadle. His new show on Showtime is Black Monday's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car. Already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. We're still talking self-loathing with the star of Black Monday, Don Cheadle. It's not that kind of black. It's another kind of black.
Yes, there's double and triple entendres.
Well, that gets me to a question of you having played these guys. And I think it's interesting, these guys who are in businesses between A House of Lies and Black Monday that don't always conduct themselves in the most ethical of ways, and being a person of color playing that brings some unusual kind of things to pay attention to, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. I think it does, and that's something that, you know, the series, as you see, as we go forward, we explore more and more, and, you know, hopefully if we come back and get to do it again, these will be issues that we lean into more and more, and the ways that this particular trading firm's, interaction with the boys club, the Blue Bloods club, how that affects them in ways that it wouldn't affect other teams necessarily, and the things that they have to be wary of that other groups may not have to be wary of because of their makeup. So that, again, is stuff that it's fun to have the opportunity to play with. And like I said, it doesn't have to be front and center in every episode, but it's definitely there as fodder, if you know, to use.
Interesting, because there's that kind of contrast between your character and Regina, who plays somebody who would logically think was being the kind of person who would end up there, somebody who's came up with hippie parents, who was raised well, who went to the best schools, and ended up probably in the worst possible place.
Right.
And then there's your character, who we don't know a whole lot about at this point. Is that still going to end up being part of the mystery as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's something
that
we're
going to... this guy who just sort of seems to be dropped in and is taking advantage of every opportunity he possibly can?
Yeah. There is a who is he? There is a... how did Mo get here? What is his real makeup? What is his real history?
I think in one episode, we think we're learning something about him that he's just completely made up at a burger joint just to take advantage of somebody.
That's right. Yeah. That again, nothing. No lie is too big. If you need to land a fish, you just do it. In the line when he says, "I need to figure out how to make this guy love me so I can, stab him in the back." It's like, that's just how he thinks. And they're all like, "Oh yeah, let's figure that out." Everyone's on board with that. No one's like, that's not really the best way to go about it. Regina's character does. Dawn's like, really? But everybody else is like, yeah, let's put that plan in place.
Because at some point, and this is one of the times this hasn't happened, and it feels like sometimes it's kind of a given for black characters, either you're like the victim or the conscience.
Right.
And you're neither of those here.
Yeah.
And I think that's got to appeal to you too, doesn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I used to get a lot of offers, and the sort of, I guess the code for what the role would be is they'd say, well, he's the heart of the piece. I'm like, oh, so he's going to have no love. No, there'll be no love in his life. He will never make a mistake. Basically, he's not interesting is what you're saying. And that's pitched to me as something that's supposed to be, he's the heart of the piece. I'm like, I want to be the balls of the piece. I don't want to be the heart of the piece. Can I be I want to be the leg of the piece or something else. Give me another part of him to be. But yeah, Mo is neither. He's, I've had people say, like, I don't know why I like watching him because I don't think I like him. It's like, I'm not sure that I like this dude, but I kind of want to see what he's doing. And
but
I'm
you
kinda,
don't want people to like him, do you?
No, but I'm saying that people still in some ways, they're watching something that they think is kind of a circus, but they're also, some people have an affinity for him. They don't like him, but they're like, I feel like I understand this dude and I kind of rock with him in some ways, but he's not, I can't say he's likable.
Do you think it's because he's in command, or rather he thinks he's in command all the time? Because he's also, again, constantly having the rug pulled out from under him.
I think because he's a live wire. I think because he's just loose. He's just, I think very few times are people in their lives just unhinged and just kind of go and say and do and think and feel whatever they want to feel and deal with the consequences later. Very few people do that. And I think Mo, to his detriment, often does that, and he expresses that. And I think that may be something that people kind of connect to or live vicariously through that kind of thing. And he's also a fool. He's also funny, and I think that's disarming sometimes for people. And they're like, wait a minute, why am I laughing with this dude? I don't like this dude. But he made me laugh, and that gets in.
I got to think, too, you must like the fact that he's really a character of the times. He's really sort of constant over the times. He really couldn't exist in any other period but the late 80s.
100%, you know, with the Lionel Richie hair and, you know, the...
And those outfits.
The Mark Ruffin mustache, all this stuff. Yeah, the outfits, the... Yeah, he is definitely...
I feel like he chose the outfits that could not be... There's stuff in the 80s that you could wear now. There's nothing that he could wear.
you would look
at and you go, what?
Yeah, he would be looked at for every fashion choice that he makes.
Because everything he wears is to say, hey, I'm here. There's like a wild pattern going up against another wild pattern. I think you gravitate towards that too. All those clothes that make announcements.
Absolutely. He's always trying to come in the room and make a statement and be different than whoever else is there. And it's all, again, about this narcissism and this... pay attention to me, and I'm the most important thing. And he doesn't get if other people have a concern. He's like, well, that's, yeah, but that's your problem. We're not dealing with your concern right now. We're dealing with my concern. So everybody get on board with what's happening with me. So it all does. The clothes support that. The hair supports that. Everything supports that, you know. Yeah, embarrassment is a big theme, too, for him. I think that happens a lot. I think he... You know, uses words. He's not sure if they're right. I think his vocabulary should be smaller. He shouldn't say all the things he says. But again, I think that's a lot of how he got there. You know, a lot of how Mo got to where he is just pure bluster and just put your head down and charge and break through stuff. And I think he's savanty. In some ways, that's not a word, but I think he has.
Now it's public radio.
It's savanty. These things word, yeah. I think he's savanty. In
Isn't that
some
one of the
ways.
Commodores?
But he's, to borrow a word from Mo, he's savanty because I think he does have some sort of intuitive, you know, things that he figures out.
We're talking about animal cunning with my guest Don Cheadle, who's starring in Black Monday on Showtime. But it's funny, I actually saw more connections between Mo and Miles Davis, who in some ways are that same kind of person, that they don't trust anybody. They do something that's kind of public, but they really don't like the public, don't know how to connect to the public. Some part of them that's kind of self-medicating.
Yes.
There's some part of them that kind of leads with that self-hatred so that somebody else can't take them out on it.
Absolutely.
I actually saw the connection between the two of them. Did you see that as well?
And like I said, to use that word again, I won't use it, but a genius. There is a...
But Miles' genius was identified. And he knew the world in which he was. That's the thing that's maybe the difference between them, is that Miles completely understands his talent, was able to use that talent in a way to intimidate people and back people down. Mo doesn't really have a talent.
I think his talent is in knowing the pieces that he needs to put around him to protect him, mostly Dawn, to have his back when he goes out on one and she's got to sweep it stuff back into a corner. No, I think they've had that happen several times over the course of their relationship. And how, like, I think he's smart in the ways of how to... I think he can suss out people's, they used to call it checking for larceny, you know, where dudes would drop a wad of money around somebody and see how they reacted to it. And I think he's good at checking for larceny. And in that way, game recognized game, and knows who to take advantage of because they're as scummy as he is in many ways.
But there's also that presumption, and there's part of this in Miles too, that he thinks everybody's as bad as he is. And it, given the proper circumstance, like just dropping that wallet and seeing who's going to pick it up and return it.
That's right. Or not.
Or in Miles' case, just sort of just seeing at what point somebody's going to back down. That sort of thing. How much can I make you feel like me so I know how to act around you? Because I can make you like me so at least I understand who I am.
Well, there's always a testing ground, right? There's always pressure that is put on any interaction with somebody. And I do think that for Mo, it's got to be a winner and a loser. You know, it's a zero-sum game.
But so many of the characters that you played, I'm just watching Trader Get Ready for This and a few other things, are guys who kind of husband information, who keep things from other people. And to that extent, Mo is like a lot of these guys who still is keeping something in check. And you like guys who have secrets, don't you?
Yeah, I think secrets are really interesting. I think when a character is hiding something and they are sitting on top of something, I think that you can feel it if that's present in your mind when you're acting it. If that secret is alive with you and it's something that you're understanding is how it works in the scene, I think people do suss that out, just like in real life. We often feel that people aren't saying everything or there's something more than meets the eye. Something else is going on. And I think if there's a theme, again, you're observing something I never thought about. I'm like, oh, geez, I got to talk to my therapist about it. Why am I playing characters that don't share everything? Maybe my wife was right. Oh, no, this is bad. But I think characters are definitely interesting when they have more than meets the eye that's going on, as we all do. I mean, you know.
But to be attracted to those kinds of characters who, and this, it's not always on the page. You found a way to make that a part of these guys' makeup, that there's some piece of information they're withholding in some ways because it's a part of themselves that they hold on to sort of stay sane. And I think that's something that really applies to a lot of these guys you've done, and most seems to be almost the apotheosis of this person.
Well, for me, I'm always trying to find, you know, if you're playing someone really dark, where do I connect with him? Where is his lightness? And vice versa, you know?
Sure.
If this guy's a saint, for whatever that means, you know, where is he a monster? And how elastic can you make this person? What are the parameters? And I think this, if you can stretch them out as far as you can and hold both of those things at the same time, then you have a lot of bandwidth to create this human being. And I guess, yeah, when I think about, like you bring up these examples, I have played characters who have those other things going on, but that's my attraction to material. Usually it's really what it is. It's my being attracted to characters that I think are that are multidimensional, that aren't, you know, just cardboard cutout, that are people that in some ways you have to reckon with, that aren't easy to reckon with, that, you know, hopefully challenge you to reckon with them and think about in relationship to yourself, like, wow, do I see myself in that person? Where am I in that person? How does that person reflect and refract on who I am, you know?
But sometimes that holding on the information becomes a part of the comedy of it too, doesn't it? I mean, just sort of keeping that part of yourself to yourself.
Absolutely. And thinking that, you know, people walk around a lot of times thinking they're opaque too. And you tell somebody something, they go, really? You're like, yeah, I can see you. What do you, you know, you're not that hidden. So I think that that's another thing that Mo doesn't really have is a strong awareness of how he is seen by other people. I don't think he's clear about that. I think he thinks that he's slicker than he is.
No, that's what I was saying. I think the fundamental difference between Mo and Miles, even though I think there are a lot of similarities, is that Miles has some awareness of the way he comes across. He manufactured a persona to some extent that he used to keep people away so he could just keep a lot of himself hidden from people. And
because of a real vulnerability there and a real insecurity there, for sure.
And a real fear. I mean, yeah. That's the thing that they probably both have in common, isn't it?
That's definitely, I think definitely Mo has a lot of that that's operating. And, you know, the episode where the guy's going to hopefully write a movie about him. And at the end, you know, he's like, so you couldn't just say you needed her? And Mo's like, but yeah, there's a way that works too, isn't it? Doesn't that work too? I'm a tortured character. That's kind of exciting. These guys like, no, that's pathetic.
No, that's just sad.
That's just sad. It's just sad.
Well, my guest who's never sad is always welcome here is Don Cheadle. We're out of time already. You know you're always welcome here.
Oh, I appreciate you, man.
Oh, my pleasure. My guest who's starring in an unusual comedy on Showtime, Black Monday, is Don Cheadle. Our recording engineer at NPR West is Josh Newell. The show is mixed by Kat Yor, edited by Blake Fighters, associate producer. I think I'm not going to get out of bed tomorrow. It's the treatment. Catch up on past episodes with The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.